Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutade Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Shamini Ti Namine Namaste Sarshate Deve Gaudavani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vashtachatesha Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shadi Gaur Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna 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 Hari Hari Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, I'll tell you a little bit from 1968-69 at 26 Second Avenue. The first time I saw Srila Prabhupada, well, I'll tell you the story. I joined sometime in 1968, I've forgotten the date now, I was initiated in April of 1968, so I probably joined around February. What about Subhagma? I already have a garlet. Here, give this to Subhagma. So I joined around. I joined sometime around February 1968 at 26 Second Avenue. Sometimes people ask, how did you meet Srila Prabhupada? The answer is that I joined ISKCON. First I joined, then I met Prabhupada. The first time I saw him, apart from his photo on the record album or other photos in the temple, Prabhupada was on television. Prabhupada had that heart stroke. He'd gone back to India. We talked about that yesterday. And then he came back to America via the West Coast. So we saw him on television from, I guess it was San Francisco. Maybe it was Los Angeles. One of the two. And they had, of course, the devotees didn't have any television sets, so they borrowed two. They were both bad, so they got whatever they could. They got two. They put one in Prabhupada's sitting room and another, or Prabhupada's bedroom as it was, another in his sitting room. And the devotees were like moving back and forth to see where they could get better reception. And then they were seeing devotees, mostly devotees at that time, knew everyone. So they knew Mukunda, they knew Janaki, they knew all the West Coast, or so many of the West Coast devotees. So they were seeing, the television had, you know, some like, what do they call dry ice, you know, some cloudy fog, and the devotees were chanting. And then they had an interview with Prabhupada and Mukunda. Prabhupada was sitting, they were both sitting on chairs. And Prabhupada had been playing kartals very nicely. They did close-up of Prabhupada's hand with that economy of movement, that amazing economy of movement that Srila Prabhupada had in all of his gestures. And devotees, of course, were like jumping up and down and rolling on the floor and so on, seeing Srila Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada came from the West Coast to New York City. His arrival was considerably delayed by traffic, and Prabhupada commented on it. He said, this is maya sukha, illusory happiness, that it'll take you 3 hours to get from the West Coast to the East Coast and 5 hours to get from the airport. Prabhupada, at that time, Gobindadasi and Gorsundar were his servants, personal assistants. Govindadasi was very concerned about Prabhupada's health, and so there were different arrangements she had in place for limiting the number of visitors. There was in the window there was a green or a red sign indicating when Prabhupada was taking rest. And Prabhupada called Govindadasi the starvation committee, because she was, you know, regulating Prabhupada's diet according to what was healthy or what the doctor said. So Prabhupada called her the starvation committee, affectionately. He used to pronounce her name Govindasi. He lied it, Govindasi. She was also concerned about Prabhupada not playing the mridanga and all of those things. But she was serving very attentively. At some point, let's see, what can we talk about? There were some, Prabhupada would speak Monday, Wednesday, and Friday in the Bhagavatam class. And she ran away. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday in the evenings, Prabhupada would speak, and also in the morning for the Bhagavatam class. There were a handful of devotees, maybe 20, something like that. Maybe fewer than that, actually. Included were some girls, young high school girls, who were initiated and who were coming to the regular programs. They were living at home and coming in the evenings to the programs. And they were a little, what's the word, sentimental sometimes. They were, when Prabhupada would do something, they would ooh and ah. And like Prabhupada would drink water in his characteristic way, and they go, ah. And whatever else Prabhupada would do, it would be, oh, and ah, and ah, oh, Swamiji. You know, they would be, and Sudarshan, and not so much Kanchanbala. I think she was graver, more grave. But those were the girls who were there, Balai Dasi and Himavati, who were more mature. And then these, Lila Shuka, Balai Dasi's younger sister, Indira Nekayani, Sudarshan, and Kanchan Bala. Those were the girls who were coming. Himavati and Balai Dasi were living just nearby. And these girls used to come from home. Yeah, Himavati, former wife of Hansadutta. Yeah. Later she was in England. But this time she started in New York. So at one time, finally, Prabhupada told him, he said, you should be a little grave. Also, one of those girls one time asked a question after the Bhagavatam class. Could you tell us about when Tritamuni fell in the well? Because it's mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, in those sections that talk about the different sages who attended, who were present when Prikshit Maharaj was preparing to leave. One of them was Tritamuni. Tritamuni sometimes fell in a well. That's what Prabhupada says. So after the Bhagavatam class, one of the young girls asked, could you tell us about the time Sri Tritamuni fell in the well? Prabhupada said, what is that? And he said, you should ask about the subject matter of the class. There was one yoga society girl who was coming. In New York City at that time, as there are now, there are quite a number of yoga societies. Now they're unabashedly all about your body and how you look and all of that. But back then, they had some pretense of spiritual substance, which meant Mayavad philosophy, of course. These yoga societies were mostly in uptown New York, so we called the leaders of these societies uptown swamis, whereas Srila Prabhupada, in contrast, was the downtown swami. So one of these yoga society girls came from an uptown yoga society, and she was a very nice girl. I mean, she was nice. Because when you practice yoga, the first thing is to be very nice. And to have a very peaceful smile and to speak very softly and to be in harmony with those around you and to really be in oneness with your surroundings. So she was very interested, actually. She was coming quite regularly. But these Yoga Society people, you couldn't say anything to them to phase them. You couldn't knock them off their Mayavadi track. Somehow or other, after this argument and that argument, this argument and that, finally it came down to, but everything isn't really everything one. And you get this smile, kind of a knowing smile. And you couldn't say that their guru is a rascal because they would say something like, well, I could see how, you know, you might think of it that way. Anything, they were like jello, like jelly, you know, everything would bounce off them. They would not get disturbed. They would just remain peaceful and sort of mindless. So, but this girl was very sincerely interested in coming to the temple, and then Prabhupada came. And so she attended Prabhupada's class. And when it came time for questions, she asked Srila Prabhupada very submissively and very nicely, Swamiji, isn't it true that ultimately everything is one? And Prabhupada told her that no, it wasn't true that everything was one. And he gave an example. He said, just like there are nine holes in the body. He said, but does it mean that you can put food here? Or here? Or here? He says, no, you have to put the food in the stomach. It means in the mouth and then it goes to the stomach. So although there are nine holes, it's not that they're all the same. So this idea of oneness, and Prabhupada, I'm giving the summary, but he really smashed oneness until there was not, until it was pretty much all one. And I think he pretty much reduced that girl to tears, if I remember. He really... dissolved her whole conception of oneness. It just disappeared into the void. And I don't think she came back. I don't remember her continuing. But at least once she heard that not everything was one. I don't remember her coming back. I think that was it. Prabhupada came one time from Hawaii. And he mentioned that in the newspaper, the Honolulu Advertiser, they'd had an article that the Swami is a small man, but he has got a very big message. Prabhupada liked that. I went on a morning walk at that time, one time, with Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was mostly quiet on that walk. And we, I forget actually all the, what was what. I think there was one of those machines in the bus, you know, where it counts the change and all of that. Prabhupada looked at that with great interest. But what I remember is that at one point we came around the corner to from where we were walking to 26 Second Avenue. And on the side street, that means on 2nd Street or 3rd Street, 2nd Street, there was a church. And on the side of the church there was a big sign, Bingo. So Prabhupada said, what is this bango? And we explained, well, Prabhupada, it's a kind of game and you gamble. And Prabhupada said, they allow. And we said, well, they encourage it, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada just shook his head. Gambling, intoxication, maybe. I asked Prabhupada, I think on that same walk, how it was that Bhagavad Gita was lost, because Vyasadeva was still there. sometimes I've heard devotees have asked me this question also. It says that this knowledge was lost. At the same time, there's this disciplic succession, and Vyasadeva was there, so how was it lost? And Prabhupada said, lost means it was not generally known, it was not widely known. So again, Krishna spoke to Arjuna so that the knowledge would be broadcast. One time, there was a devotee, Jai Govinda, who was an American devotee. At this time, the Vietnam War was going on, and young people were being drafted into the army, into the military service. And, of course, we were not very eager to be drafted. We were eager to serve Prabhupada. But this devotee's number had come up. There was a kind of lottery system for choosing who went. And so he was stuck, you know, what to do. So it was decided that he would go abroad, and he went to, that he would go to Germany, which he did. And I remember that he came down from Prabhupada's room and said that Prabhupada had embraced him. I just took that, well, of course, Prabhupada's a guru, he embraces people, you know, kind of like that huggy lady. I just figured gurus embraced people right, left, and center. And only later did I appreciate that Prabhupada was giving him quite a blessing for going off to Germany. Our system was in the evening that the devotees would lead kirtan, and then there'd be like a little second kirtan, and Prabhupada would come down from his apartment and sit on his dais and give the class. So the one of my godbrothers, Jai Ram, was leading this little second kirtan. And he had a little, what do they call that? Not a dulcimer, an auto harp, like a little nice musical instrument, kind of sweet. And he was chanting a kind of an upbeat tune. Shri Krishna Govinda Hare Murare He Nata Narayana Vasudeva. Nice little tune too, quite upbeat. Then Prabhupada came down, and he came in, everyone offered obeisances, kirtan stopped. Prabhupada said, what is that? Krishna, Govinda, Murari, what is that? And the devotees kind of sensed that something wasn't right. And they said, we shouldn't sing that, Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, this is chanted by the Mayavadis. Although it's found in the purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, really Prabhupada's just alluding to, you know, the Mayavadi slogan. He's not saying this is something you should chant. He's just mentioning it the way he mentions sometimes Shankaracharya or other things. He said, this is chanted by the Mayavadis. We should chant what's been chanted by the Acharyas. And he said, Sri Krishna Chaitanya you can chant? And nobody knew how. We're chanting every day, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda. Nobody knew how to do it. It was there on Prabhupada's record album, but it wasn't part of our program. We chanted Hare Krishna, and chanting Sri Krishna Chaitanya was not in anyone's repertoire. So nobody knew. So Prabhupada took Mridanga, and he himself led the chanting of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda. Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Sri Vasadi Gaurabhaktivinoda. And those who were there will remember it as being a very ecstatic kirtan. So that was something new for us. Prabhupada installed... Oh, there's one devotee who joined. He was... what was his name? Jai Narayan was the name given. He was a student at Brooklyn College studying sociology. And he was initiated along with me. He was, I think, coming to the temple around the same time, and we were initiated together. And after he was initiated, he never came back. And we found out what the story was. He was doing one of those, you know, participant observer studies, you know, where you study some religion or something, and you participate at the same time. Which of course we knew. And then the culmination of his experience as a participant was to get initiated. So that was enough. Then he wrote his paper, fulfilled his requirements, and he was done. Another donation for BBT Africa. If you didn't hear the announcement, please turn off your cell phones. And if you did hear the announcement, please turn off your cell phone. So that's a good example of how not to be a disciple, simply for some to fulfill the requirement of a... And what an opportunity. People today would, you know, die 7 times over just to catch a glimpse of Prabhupada's lotus feet. And here he had the opportunity to be initiated and dedicate his life. Instead, he just got initiated and wrote a paper for his little degree. Ah, ciao. Okay. The first Radha Krishna deities were also installed in ISKCON at that time. That's the difference between me and Krishna. I was initiated and he was installed. Prabhupada would always insist that there be prasadam after kirtan. It didn't, whatever it was, it could be even little pieces of apple, which is often what it was. There had to be something to distribute. Without prasadam, the program is not complete. So always he would see. And at one time, that apple was being passed around. Prabhupada said, "This apple is Krishna's mercy on your country. In India, we have got mango." One time we were sitting with Srila Prabhupada. Let's see if something else. One time we were sitting with Srila Prabhupada. On the off nights, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, there was kirtan. And then on the other nights, we would go up to Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada would talk about Krishna Katha. Sometimes he would talk about something from British history, or whatever he wanted to talk about, he would talk about. Mostly, I mean, it was Krishna Katha, but sometimes he would talk about something. Whatever was... So many things, Prabhupada would talk about. So, one time we were sitting, all the devotees, Brahmananda Prabhu, and so many, whoever was there, enough, you know, all crowded in a little room. Prabhupada's room was maybe not so much bigger than this. And we were talking about different things. And finally, like, nobody had any more questions. And we're just sitting there. And the devotees are kind of gazing at Prabhupada. And Prabhupada's looking back at the devotees. And it was sort of a, you know, what they call a pregnant moment. You know, one of a very... You could feel the sort of special affection being exchanged. And Brahmananda Prabhu said, "Swamiji, you have so many loving children." And Prabhupada said, "Yes." And without botheration of wife. Let's see. Prabhupada was lecturing at that time about Prahlad Maharaj, which was great for us because we were all sort of anti-government, anti-establishment, and Prahlad Maharaj was the ultimate anti-establishment hero because he stood up to Hiranyakashipu, and Prabhupada talked about how he would preach to his school friends, how his they were being trained to be cheaters, bluffers, materialists. And Prahlad Maharaj was preaching to them, come on, let's chant Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada said, in this way, he ruined the whole school. We were very happy about that. One time Prabhupada asked me, why you are so skinny? I don't know, Prabhupada. One time, the really lowest place in that area was called the Bowery, which is where all the drunkards used to live on the streets, and they were really, you know, smelly and dirty and falling down drunk. I mean, super drunk. And one time, Prabhupada said that we should go to the Bowery, chant Hare Krishna, and distribute prasada. So we did. We took a kirtan party, went to the Bowery, chanted Hare Krishna, distributed prasada, and got a good collection also. The drunks were generous, yes. Hmm? They were grateful, yes. Excuse me? Greenwich Village, but this is the East Village, which means, and not even East Village, down from the East Village was the Bowery. The East Village was a little upscale. Hmm? No, south. South of all of that was Bowery, which has now become a very kind of posh, gentrified area. You have to be wealthy to live in there. You know, Banana Republic and all those stores have moved into Soho. And it's all, the whole neighborhood's changed. Even like where we have our present temple around the corner from 26 Second Avenue, the going price of an apartment in those days was about $60 on the average per month. And so all the hippies came there to live in these cheap apartments. They'd share an apartment, you know, 4 or 5 or 10 people, and $60 they'd cover the rent. Now it's like a similar apartment costs about $5,000 a month. So the neighborhood has changed. Prabhupada arranged at that time, speaking of Kanchan Bala, Prabhupada arranged for her, she was a high school girl at that time, arranged for her to marry one brahmachari, Madhusudha, to whom she's still married today. They have a nice daughter also. But Kanchan Bala's mother objected. The objection was that she was too young and that she should have more experience and get to know different boys. And then, you know, she could make an informed choice. And Prabhupada said, just see, the mother wants the daughter to become a prostitute. That was Prabhupada's comment. Just see, the mother wants the daughter to become a prostitute. Anyway, Prabhupada prevailed. And the mother didn't get what she wanted. Or maybe she did. She got a nice son-in-law and a nice granddaughter. Yeah. It was Prabhupada's mercy on the whole family. Madhusudan's father also used to do service. He used to do some service. I've talked sometimes about the Sunday feasts that we used to have at 26 Second Avenue. We ate a little austerely on the weekdays. But on the weekends, we would have huge feasts, maybe 16 or 18 or 20 some odd preparations. Quite different from the usual Sunday feast at most ISKCON temples. Should I give you a little rundown? Yeah. They would typically have, maybe 2 or 3 kinds of rice, like a lemon rice and pushpanna, at least 2 or 3 kinds of rice. They would have, of course, the cooks were either trained by Prabhupada at that time, like Hansa, like Kirtanananda, who'd already gone, but Devananda, Hansadutta. Either they'd learned from Prabhupada directly or from Kirtanananda in Parampara. So the preparations were quite traditional preparations. So this, like cauliflower potatoes, wet, like in Bengal you get, and various different vegetables, you know, three or four, maybe five different vegetable preparations. Luchi, you know, puri, but white puri with little sugar on top. Icing sugar. Luchis. We didn't even know these brown puris till like 5 years later. Always these. Apple chutney? We used to have five chutneys. There'd be an apple chutney, there'd be a tomato chutney, there'd be, you know, some other, this chutney, that chutney, maybe plum. Day chutney, always, you know, pineapple chutney, five or so different chutneys. At least, you know, two or three different kinds of pakoras, samosas always, and, you know, the samosas where you take the cauliflowers and peas and you cook it till it's all mashed up, it's one thing, and then really nicely spiced. Not what they do, these, not just potatoes and peas stuffed in, but really super nice. So the samosas, a few different kinds of pakoras, sometimes kachori, these like save, you know, little crunchy things, all of that. Now, then, okay, we'll talk about sweets. There would be, always there's sweet rice. Always there's a... There must be some sweet rice. There would be sweet rice, there would be gulab jamuns always. There would be halava of at least, you know, one or two or three varieties of halava. With cashew nuts and raisins and so many things. Halava. Rasgulla, they didn't know, I think, not yet. But these Simply Wonderfuls would always be there. And then, you know, different concoctions, several different kinds more of sweets. So it would come to like 16, 18, 20 preparations. Pudding, pastries, not so much. Cakes and things, that was later. They used to do really laddus, yeah. They had a little cookbook of a few things, and chickpea laddu also was there. They didn't even know the names for the things, you know, but they would make them. And big quantities. Papadam, yeah. Yeah, papadams, I think also, maybe we're there. I think so. And so many people would come. I mean, that storefront was packed. Like the way you're sitting on this mat, add twice as many people sitting on that same mat. And that's how the whole storefront was. People were stacked up like paper cups. You know, they were just full. Gulab jamuns were very popular. And at that time already they were ISKCON bullets. And halava was very popular. And so all of the things were very popular. The whole feast was very popular. Especially with the devotees. The devotees, you know, it was a little tough being a devotee back then. And so the devotees would think sometimes during the week about leaving. But they would think that, well, I'll wait till Sunday and then I'll leave. And of course, so many people joined. Later, I told yesterday how Prabhupada said you can leave one person behind and everybody else go on book distribution. Just leave one person behind to worship the deity. This is later, like 1975 or something. Everyone else worship the deity. Go out on Sankirtan distributing books. So in that mood, some of the devotees also started cutting down the feast. That, well, you know, so we can all go out and distribute books. We'll have, you know, like some puris and some Halava and one or two subjis, and that's it, so that we can all go out and distribute books. So they cut it way down to almost nothing. And Prabhupada heard about it, and he reversed the policy. He said, no, it should be opulent. It should be opulent. Okay. Let's see what else. After I was initiated, like the day after I went to Boston, there was a Govinda Dasi was a very good assistant, but she was a little frail, her delicate and kind of frail girl. So she would sometimes become exhausted in cooking. So they decided that they should have an assistant cook. And either it was going to be this one devotee, Devananda, that's actually who they thought it would be. He was not a bad cook, I think. Devananda Brahmachari. And then Satsuru Maharaj, who had come from Boston, suggested, he suggested me. I never cooked anything in my life. So there was some discussion about it, and they thought, if he can't handle it, he can go for 2 weeks, and Devananda can go for 2 weeks. And if Jayadvaita can't handle it, then he can come back sooner, and Devananda can go earlier. So that's how they settled it up. So that's how I got to go to Boston right after I was initiated. We all stayed up the night before Prabhupada came, painting and preparing everything, just a few devotees. And then we all fell asleep in Prabhupada's apartment. Prabhupada arrived and we were all sleeping afterwards. We spent a little time with him and then all fell asleep. Who is that snoring? Prabhupada asked. Then we woke up and Prabhupada was talking to Jadarani about the Kadamba trees and drawing pictures of what the Kadamba flowers look like. There are many colleges in Boston, and Prabhupada did engagements at many of them. The Prabhupada spoke at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which is kind of like IIT. It's in fact the model for IIT. Prabhupada spoke there. Someplace in the lounge where he was sitting, there was a big tuning fork, like a big symbol of a tuning fork. Or it was a tuning fork or it was something that was sitting there like that. So after Prabhupada spoke, one of the students asked, what is that? Prabhupada said, I do not know. That is your symbol. But Prabhupada's point when he spoke was that there are so many departments of your university, but where's the department for distinguishing the difference between a living body and a dead body? He said, that science we're lacking. At another time, Prabhupada spoke at Marsh Chapel at Boston University. It's like a little church hall, kind of good sized, and that's a big university. But somehow it had been scheduled, the engagement had been scheduled around examination time, so hardly anyone came. But still Prabhupada spoke, very super lecture. I think he had Brahmananda speak, then he spoke. And one student asked a question. He was kind of a, maybe he was even a graduate student because he seemed to know something. And he asked Prabhupada a question about Advaita philosophy. So it was a real question about Advaita philosophy, and it was articulately expressed. And there was the usual story, what is all that? Okay, it's just background noise. Yeah. Okay, let's speak into the phone. The usual example was given about the drop merging with the ocean and becoming one with the ocean, I think. this is the easier way to do it. It's better, isn't it? And Prabhupada heard the question patiently and then said that yes, the drop may merge with the ocean, but then the sun comes and evaporates that drop, and again it becomes part of the cloud. So it goes on like that. He said, but if you become one of the fish, if you become like the fish in the ocean, then you can stay permanently and enjoy. So he said, in this way, you're one with the ocean, but you maintain your individuality. He said, that's better. Prabhupada spoke at another engagement at Northeastern University. They had, you know, there's always statues of something. They had a statue of a dog. Govindadasi noted that they had a dog as their school symbol. But at one engagement, Prabhupada spoke, and it was a big engagement. And leaving the lecture hall, there was a big, another hall, where we had exhibits and prasadam, and it was very full. Lots of students and lots of people in that hall. So Prabhupada gave the lecture, and then we're going to carry on, and Prabhupada's leaving through that hall. And as I was there doing something, or preaching to someone or something, and all of a sudden this big ripple went through the room. You know how a ripple goes through the room? Big... how it's like starts with one person and they go, what do you say? What do you say? What happened? So this big ripple went through the room. And I don't know what happened, but later I asked a devotee, what happened? Here's what happened. Prabhupada was talking to one professor. Maybe he was an Indian professor. And the man was arguing Mayavad philosophy. And you'd going on and on, how they always have something else to say, and something, it's always going to be one, it's always going to be one. Anyway, however you add it up, it always comes to one. And Prabhupada finally grabbed him by the shirt and said, if everything is one, then why don't you wear a cotton ball instead of a shirt? The cotton ball is the raw cotton that you find on the plant. If everything is one, then why don't you wear a cotton ball instead of a shirt? Prabhupada, literally shook him. So everyone was, wow. I don't think the man had an answer either. I said I became the assistant cook. Prabhupada's eating in those days was very, very simple. A little steamed rice, a little dal, a little eggplant, spinach, and tomato cooked together until it was a little dry. Some little Brussels sprouts, baby Brussels sprouts cut in half and sauteed in a little butter, maybe with some chickpeas or something. And maybe a little bindi. Very little, simple, 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 simple. And for spices, just salt, turmeric, cumin, little tiny bit of red chili flakes like you buy at the store. And that's all. Very, very simple. And chapatis. But one time, the chapatis weren't coming out very good. We were in this little house that they'd rented, and it had an electric stove. So it was very problematic. How do you cook the chapatis on an electric stove? Because you've got your skillet, but it's either too cool, or once it gets going, it's too hot. So the chapatis become, when you try to cook them, they become like either they're dough or they're crackers. And then how do you blow them up? Because there's no flame. So it was a real hardship. And then chapatis were coming out terrible, and Prabhupada was very dissatisfied. So the first day he said something. Second day he said something. Third day he said, you make the dough, and when you're ready, you call me. So Prabhupada, we called Prabhupada. Prabhupada came in. And the first thing he did is he took the skillet we were using, the pan, and he turned it upside down. So the heat is rising from the electric burner and creating this nice even heat. And there's a system, maybe some of you who are from India know it, how you can cook a whole stack of chapatis, like 7 or 10 at once. Prabhupada was doing it that way. We'd never seen such a thing. A Bengali, particularly Bengali thing. And Prabhupada, for us it was mystic. You put a chapati down, you cook one side, you put another chapati on top of it, and you flip the two. Now you've got two, you put another one on top, you've got three. And so pretty soon you have like 7 or 10 chapatis. And there's always a new side hitting the heat, and there's always a finished chapati coming off the top. And for us it was like, you know, like a card trick practically. You know, how is Prabhupada doing that? And he was telling, you know, we were buttering them and we were rolling them, and Prabhupada was saying, faster, faster. You know, we were two of us, Govinda and I, couldn't keep up. And Prabhupada was cooking them like that. It was, you know, like magic as far as we could understand. And then, but now how do you blow up the chapatis? So Prabhupada took from the oven, there's a grill. Prabhupada took the grill out of the oven, put it on top of two burners. The heat's rising, the chapatis are blowing up perfectly. One time I brought Prabhupada's, his prasadam, and these big black ants started crawling on Prabhupada's plate. So I started to, you know, like brush them off. Prabhupada said, no, they are also living entities. Let them play. I'm going to skip some things and tell some things. There was one boy who was coming to the temple in Boston. His name was Bhakta Eddie. He was a hairdresser, I think, by profession. And apparently he was the son of a wealthy person, also one of my god sisters recently reminded me. And he was very attracted to Prabhupada. And I think he'd come up from New York, in fact, to be there in Boston. And he would try to do some service, like Prabhupada was leaving the temple, so he was ready there with Prabhupada's shoes and helping Prabhupada put on his shoes. Prabhupada said, oh, you are so nice. And the next morning, perhaps, he went on Prabhupada's morning walk and asked Prabhupada if he could be initiated. And Prabhupada said, first you understand the philosophy. He said, if today you come on sentiment, tomorrow you will leave on sentiment. And actually that's what happened. He didn't stay. Prabhupada spoke at Temple University in Philadelphia, where Rupendra Swarup Prabhu earned his doctorate. And there was one Mayavadi sannyasi who was teaching there a course on Vedanta. So one of the students attended Prabhupada's lecture and he asked a question, what about Vedanta? What about Vedanta philosophy? And Prabhupada asked him, what is the meaning of Vedanta? And the boy couldn't answer. And Prabhupada explained that Veda means knowledge. And anta means the last word, the conclusion. And Prabhupada quoted, Vedaischa Sarvair, Hameva Veja. That Vedanta means to know Krishna. That's Vedanta. And very strongly argued. And then later he said that he's studying Vedanta. He doesn't even know the meaning of the word Vedanta. No, that was there. Yeah, the teacher didn't explain it. You know, just some, again, impersonal hodgepodge. Let's see. I told about the press a little bit yesterday when we had ISKCON Press in Boston. At one point, Prabhupada was in San Francisco for the Rath Yatra. At that time, there was only one Rath Yatra festival in America, and that was in San Francisco. In fact, Prabhupada called San Francisco New Jagannath Puri. Lord Jagannath was installed there, and they had really a huge Rath Yatra. So in Boston, we devised a plan that we would all jump in a van, drive across the country. It takes like 2 days if you drive nonstop. We'd attend the Rath Yatra, and then we would drive, you know, 2 days back and be back in Boston. And Prabhupada heard about it, and Prabhupada said, why do they want to do that? He said, they should do their service. So it was a kind of sense gratification. We'll go see Prabhupada, we'll go to Rath Yatra. And Prabhupada wanted us to do our service. The Prabhupada used to send his dictation tapes to Boston. The Krishna book was going on at that time. Nobody knew about Krishna's pastimes. You know, we knew Bhagavad Gita, we knew some philosophy, knew something from first canto of Bhagavatam. But all of these pastimes of Krishna from 10th canto were all revelations for us. We had never heard about it. But the artists were there in Boston. They were painting the pictures. And the devotees in Boston, at least, were hearing the Krishna's pastimes. Prabhupada used to send these little cassettes with the tapes. And he used to just wrap them up in envelopes. If somebody sent him a letter, he would reuse the envelope from the letter, turn it inside out, then wrap the cassette in that, address it, and send it. So Satsrut Maharaj was doing the transcription. I was doing the transcription. Narayani Dasi, who's here, joined in Boston. And she also began transcribing. I think that was her first engagement, transcribing Krishna book. Let's move to New York. This is maybe 1974. Prabhupada came to Kennedy Airport. He arrived. Kennedy Airport had a new terminal then, the TWA terminal, which was a very beautifully designed thing. It was a very noted architectural design at the time. And it was shaped something like a bird, and it involved these sort of tunnels that came in and fed into the main waiting area. And we were waiting for Prabhupada, and so many devotees came. We all just, Kennedy Airport's far from downtown New York. We all came out there in our buses and in our cars and trucks, vans. And we're having a big roaring kirtan in the airport. We used to drive the airport managers crazy because we would come with drums and kartals and so many devotees. And sometimes we were reading about Krishna entering Dwarka, so we'd have rice to throw and grains to throw and sometimes yogurt to throw. They loved us a lot in the airport. Anyway, we were having this big roaring kirtan and we had big flower garlands to offer to Prabhupada. And all these devotees are coming. And finally, the plane is about to land, so we really start the kirtan going. And then the word came that Prabhupada's name was not on the passenger list. Those days, you used to be able to know who the passengers were. Prabhupada's name wasn't on the passenger list. now we're going to have to take all these devotees back to the temple. Nice trip out to the airport. And then just as we were speaking in that way, then Prabhupada came. And it was especially beautiful because you couldn't go into these tunnels that the passengers arrived from. And the tunnel was like carpeted in red, and it was sort of stucco walls, semicircular. And Prabhupada just came like floating through that tunnel with his cane and his regal appearance. It just came floating through that tunnel. And the devotees couldn't go, you know, so they're just watching Prabhupada getting closer and closer. And they're doing kirtan. And finally Prabhupada came. And I got to offer Prabhupada a big garland. They had Prabhupada like gardenias. We had these enormous gardenia garland. And I put it on Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, I read your article. I was totally blank. I had no idea what in the world he was talking about. But then Prabhupada said, I read your article. Who is that girl with Krishna? I'd written an article about Srimati Radharani that was published in BTG. Prabhupada said it was very nice. That was nice for me. Prabhupada used to give instructions to the artists. He at one point was complaining about what he called these bust pictures, which means pictures of the acharyas, you know, just head and shoulders. He didn't like that. He wanted the full form. And he was explaining. One time he was taking his massage, and then he was talking to, I think, Bharadraj about this, that someone had gotten a machine, a massage machine, and they were trying it out, you know. And it didn't last very long. But Prabhupada's sitting there, forgive me for being a little non-etiquette here, but Prabhupada's sitting here like this, and he's taking his massage, he's got his gamsha, and he's massaging his leg, and Prabhupada's saying, what are these bust pictures? He said, the full form should be there. He said, the pictures are not for decoration, they're for worship. Bande Guru Sri Charanaravindam. When Prabhupada left New York that time, it was also from Kennedy Airport, and the devotees had reserved like a little VIP lounge for Prabhupada. And it was quite packed, actually. There were so many devotees that we couldn't all fit there, but as many as possible. And it was quite nice. Somebody gave Srila Prabhupada a picture of the deity, Radha Govinda, from New York. A nice frame. So Prabhupada was sitting, so he put the picture on a nice table. And then somebody gave Prabhupada some flowers or a garland. So Prabhupada took the garland and offered that to the picture of Radha Govinda. And then someone also gave some prasadam to Srila Prabhupada, like a nice tray of fruits. So Prabhupada put the fruits in front of Radha Govinda. And then someone gave Prabhupada some agarbati also. There's no place to put the agarbati. I thought, you know, what's... So Prabhupada took a piece of watermelon off the tray and put that to the side and put the agarbati in the watermelon. So Prabhupada, just in that little room, he created a whole Radha Krishna temple. Then he said, now have kirtan. At that time, it was an evening flight, so while we were there, Gopal Krishna Maharaj came. He was in his former ashram as a householder, so he came in his business suit and came and offered obeisances and apologized. I'm sorry, I'm very sorry, Prabhupada, for coming in my karmi clothes. Prabhupada said, not karma. He said, karma yogi. Anashrita karma palam karyam karma karotiya sasannyasi. The person who performs his prescribed duties, he's actually a sannyasi. Prabhupada did a lot of initiations in New York at that time. This is maybe 1971, probably did a lot of initiations. Just dozens and dozens and dozens of devotees. One day it was like all the ratas. There was an Ekarat and a Saptarat and a Dasarat. And another day there was an Ekaratna and a Pancharatna and a Ashtaratna. It was going on like that. He initiated a little girl, just a little young girl. So what are the rules? When she said no illicit sex, Prabhupada just chuckled. We've told sometimes about how there was one devotee, Siddhasarupananda. He'd been a big guru on his own in Hawaii, and he joined and brought all of his people to Prabhupada, and he'd initiated them. His name was Sai before he'd initiated them, but then he turned all his disciples over to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada initiated them. And from Sai, from Siddhasarupa, they all had names like Radharani and Lalita, and, you know, very beautiful names. And Prabhupada gave names like Bhadra, Durga, Chaya, you know, all names of Maya. What's that? Balgopal, yeah. But that wasn't in New York. Yeah, in New York. I mean, I'm sure there were some exceptions, but quite a notable number of Lalitas and Radharanis became Chayas and Bhadras and so on. And sort of the icing on the cake, he named one girl Mahamaya. And devotees all laughed, you know, Prabhupada's naming this girl Mahamaya. You know, we knew it all along, right? But Mahamaya. And Prabhupada said, don't laugh. Lots of times devotees would kind of laugh when they hear the name. Prabhupada said, this is serious business. But Mahamaya said, don't laugh. He said, Mahamaya is another face of Radharani. You heard that from Mahamaya? Yeah. The Mahamaya is another face of Radharani. When initiating Brahmins at that time, Prabhupada was emphasizing that first initiation we can be very liberal, but second initiation we should be very strict. So he saw the list of Brahmins recommended by the temple presidents, and he has this list been carefully gone through? So then they went through the list and really cut it down. And I remember one of the devotees who was cut out, he was so angry, I am too a Brahmin. You're totally passionate. You know, what do you mean? So that was there. The one devotee, he was quite capable of giving speeches and so on. And after one of Prabhupada's classes, he began by saying, Srila Prabhupada, we have a great desire to distribute your Back to Godhead or your books. And Prabhupada said, just keep that desire, that's all. There was a drama let's see, we're kind of running out of time, aren't we? Half an hour more. Okay. Let's see there. One time Prabhupada... Oh, this is... So I'll tell you a couple of stories. One time Prabhupada was walking in... took a walk in Central Park. No, I won't tell you that story. I'll tell you another story. One time Prabhupada was in the temple in New York. He gave his lecture. And the temple was kind of long and narrow. Like if you take this side of the room, It's like that, long and narrow. The deities are over there, and Prabhupada's asana is over here. And the door to the temple is over here. From the door, he goes to his apartment. So, Prabhupada gave his lecture and got down from his asana. And as he got down from his asana, Bharadvaja Prabhu began a bhajan. I forget which bhajan. He began bhajan. He's a very good kirtan leader. And Prabhupada just became stunned. I think he was going to bow down to the deity, but he didn't go down, he didn't go up, he didn't move out. He just stood there. He just froze. And Bharadvaja kept chanting, and Prabhupada was just there seeing the deity and hearing the kirtan, or not seeing, not hearing, I don't know. And the whole room just became ecstatic. You know, everyone, whatever mood Prabhupada was in somehow communicated itself in some way, or everyone saw that something extraordinary was going on. And Bharadvaja kept chanting, and Prabhupada was there, and the devotees were all in kind of awe. And Prabhupada's looking at the deities, and devotees are there, and Prabhupada's frozen. And then Pujari closed the curtains. Prabhupada left. Prabhupada didn't show such symptoms commonly, but sometimes. There were dramas performed. Our god sister Rasa Gyal was a wonderful actress, and her husband was also a good actor, Lohitaksha. And we had a godbrother, Loka Mangala, who was the archetypical demon. He was such a good demon. Every play he was the demon. And they performed a drama for Srila Prabhupada, the kidnapping of Rukmini. Maybe you've seen that picture of Prabhupada sitting in a white rocking chair. So he's seeing that drama. I think it's the most wonderful drama I ever saw in my life. It was so nicely done. And Prabhupada appreciated it very much. At one point, Rukmi has Krishna captures him and cuts off his hair in patches and makes him look funny. Prabhupada said, "Oh, worse than death." I think he said that the play was better than the book. There was some, later in New York, there was some, what would you call it, untoward activities, and Srila Prabhupada detected what he considered to be disrespect to the spiritual master. Although it wasn't exactly clear to everyone what was going on, but somehow this was going on, and it was quite a serious thing. And Prabhupada was sitting on his asana. His asana, as I said, is here. And behind Prabhupada, there are pictures of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gorkhishor Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhaktivinoda Thakur paintings. And Prabhupada sitting on his asana, and kirtan is going on. And Prabhupada calls the temple president, Gopi Janavallabha. And of course, he speaks something to him, and Gopi Janavallabha's jaw just drops. So later we asked, you know, what did Prabhupada say? And he said that Prabhupada had looked at the pictures, and he said, where is the picture of your Guru Maharaj? Because the other pictures were there, but there was no picture. And of course the explanation could be given that, you know, well, on the asan your picture would be there, but Prabhupada wasn't buying it. You know, the other pictures were there, where's the picture of your Guru Maharaj? Prabhupada was quite careful about these things. I'm going to skip around a little bit. I'll tell you a story from here. After Prabhupada installed Krishna Balaram here in the temple, he was very pleased. I think you've seen the picture of Prabhupada doing the installation and fanning the deities. Prabhupada, after so much trouble, installed the deities. And the next morning on his walk also, he was very pleased. And he was telling the story of Krishna Balaram, how Krishna, Prabhupada said, is flattering Balaram, that, my dear brother, all of these trees are bending down to offer your obeisances, and these bees are all great sages who are chanting your glories. So Prabhupada's speaking in that way. And remembering how he had everyone working so hard to open the temple, Prabhupada said, I was practically whipping them. And Prabhupada said that he'd installed Gaur-Nitai and Krishna Balaram to show this principle that there's no difference between Krishna Balaram and Nitai Gaur. And Prabhupada said, if you ever have any problem, he said, you can come before Krishna Balaram or Gaur-Nitai and say, sir, this is the difficulty, and they will do the needful. On Prabhupada's morning walks, they were very competitive, Prabhupada's morning walks. You had to be a big shot. Of course, in the early days, maybe anyone could go. But by the mid-1970s, you had to be a GBC man or a sannyasi or, you know, a temple president at least, or Vishaka. It's always these heavy-duty, you know, the Tamal Krishna Maharajas and the, you know, all the heavy, heavy ISKCON leaders and Vishakha Dasi, because she was taking pictures and she would come. I couldn't get on most of those walks. They were just so competitive. And to get into a car, it was like a brawl practically, who would get into this car to be with Prabhupada. But Prabhupada would speak, and sometimes, like, Prabhupada he'd be talking about women and how they have 50% brain substance. But then Prabhupada, with a nod to Vishakha, he would say, but when she becomes Krishna conscious, she develops the other half. He told, you've read in Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada was talking about a man in the mode of passion. What is that? Men in the mode of passion worship some ordinary human being. And how there was someone who was making money on the black market due to the war and therefore was worshipping Adolf Hitler. And Prabhupada told that on the walk. And he said the same thing, that this man was worshipping Hitler. And he illustrated, Jaya Hitler, Jaya Hitler. On one walk, Prabhupada said that last year at this time, when I came, I was working, but I was also eating. He said, now I'm working, but I'm not eating very much. He said, so it's a bargain for you. That you're getting just as much, but I'm less expenditure. I asked Prabhupada on one walk, on Venice Beach, I said, Srila Prabhupada, all the devotees say that since you've come here to Los Angeles, to New Dwarka, the deities look even more beautiful. And Prabhupada said, that is my anxiety. I didn't understand, you know, why is Prabhupada saying that? That is my anxiety. Then, you know, Prabhupada again was walking, and Prabhupada said, that is my anxiety, that after I leave, you will neglect the deity worship, and then everything will be finished. I was once with Prabhupada in Detroit. We have a very grand temple there, and our devotee Lekha Shravanti, who helped purchase the temple along with Ambarish Prabhu, was very well connected with the political leaders of the city. Her father had been an important person, leader in labor unions and so on, and so she was quite well connected, and she brought different people to visit Prabhupada. One was a local politician. He happened to be a black man, very nice person. And the deities are very beautiful also in Detroit. Radha Kunja Bihari, I think. And the beautiful arches that were there in the building when they got it. And Krishna's beautiful black marble deity and Radharani white marble. So Prabhupada met this man and said, you have seen the deity? And the man had seen the deity. Prabhupada said, yes. He said, Krishna is also coming from your community. Excuse me? Walter Reuther, yes. Yeah, he was a very important man. In Toronto, when I was there, one journalist came to see Srila Prabhupada. A young lady, you know, quite a young girl. She looked to me like she just finished journalism school. And she came and she had her interview with Prabhupada, and she asked the usual dumb questions, you know, about dress and nothing very profound. But what struck me was that Prabhupada didn't treat her like a journalist at all. Prabhupada just treated her as like a spirit soul who somehow or other wandered into his room, and he was just giving her whatever he could about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, just something Krishna conscious. I think that was also the woman who, if I remember, asked Prabhupada, why do you shave your head? And Prabhupada responded to her, why do you shave your legs? Prabhupada said, better to have a cool brain and warm legs. Warm legs and a cool brain. I don't remember that. Could be. In Mayapur one time, Prabhupada, well, there's another story too. When we first came to Mayapur one year, one lady, Gayatri Dasi, had made a cake. She was a very celebrated baker, very, very good, from Florida. And she'd made a cake, and the devotees who'd come from America had brought it to Mayapur. And as soon as they got to Mayapur, sannyasis, you know, grabbed it The sannyasis were maybe in a little bit different mood from today. You know, they were like privileged people, and they were entitled to the cake because, you know, they're the sannyasis. They get the first of everything. But this devotee had traveled from Florida to London and so many hours in the airport in London and then to Calcutta and then the long drive out to Mayapur. So by the time they got to Mayapur, the cake was poisoned. And so all of the devotees, these sannyasis especially, they're like the what we call the lotus building, which is no longer even there practically, but the building where Prabhupada's room is. Or maybe it was the beginning of the long building. Maybe it was the long building by that time. It was just under construction, so, you know, it was a rough roof with steel still sticking up in it. And these sannyasis lying there, you know, retching and in pain and totally looking like they're going to die. And the devotees, you know, people were concerned that these men are going to die. They've been poisoned. And Prabhupada said, just let them take a little charanamrita and everything will be all right. And they did. They took a little charanamrita and everything was all right. Another time, Prabhupada came from his morning walk in Mayapur and came into the lotus building to go up to his quarters. And on the way, a little bird with some straw in its mouth darted into a crack in the building. Prabhupada said, what does this mean? And you know, they're all, again, sannyasis, and the important people are on the walk. And what does this mean? And someone said that, Srila Prabhupada, we should make we should be more careful and make sure that these cracks are properly sealed. And someone else said, you know, because everyone wants to kind of say the right thing. Someone said, we're all fools, Srila Prabhupada. So everyone's saying something. Finally, Prabhupada said, it means that his wife is pregnant and therefore he is building a house. Maybe Prabhupada then said something about Griha Kshetra Shuta Apta. I forget about that. One time on the veranda in Prabhupada, in Mayapur, Prabhupada was sitting. I think one other devotee, Radha Vallabha, and I were there. Prabhupada had freshly shaved head and just wearing his uttariya. And Prabhupada went like this. He said, anything good you try to do, he said, there will be so much difficulty. Anything good you want to do, there will be so much difficulty. Couldn't hear. Prabhupada said, anything... Haji? Couldn't hear. Okay. Prabhupada said, anything good you want to do, there will be so much difficulty. One time here in Vrindavan, Prabhupada went on a walk, and there's a place called Ranganath Garden, which Prabhupada said it at one time had been the most beautiful gardens. Now, at that time, it was already kind of dilapidated. And Prabhupada was walking there, and he came to a kind of a raised platform, and covered by, you know, like a roof of some sort. And maybe there was a little music playing or something, I forget, maybe a little agarbati. And Prabhupada got up on that platform to see, you know, quite spacious. And there was a deity of Durga. So Prabhupada offered full dandavats before the deity of Durga. And he recited Srishti Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shaktireka. He said, we are also worshipping Durga, but not like the materialists. The materialists are worshipping, what is that Durga, you know, something Dehi in this day? Janam Dehi, Rupam Dehi, this, give me this, give me that, followers and good looks and money. They're worshipping Durga, please give me all these things. He said, but we're not worshipping like that. He said, just like the gopis, they're worshipping Katyayani. Katyayani means Durga. That my dear Katyayani, you're very dear to Krishna because you're always carrying out his instructions. So please give us your mercy that we can have Krishna as our husband. So, in that way. That reminds me of another thing. Here in Vrindavan, in the room that's now Prabhupada's library, it was vacant, but it was originally meant to be a bank. Prabhupada's idea was that there'll be a guest house, and the guests can avail themselves of the bank. So, Punjab National Bank was invited to take the concession, and there was a little opening ceremony, and the bankers were there, a few men, and Prabhupada cut the ribbon for the bank and opened the first account, and there was a little prasadam to be distributed, and the devotees were there, whoever was there for the ceremony. And Prabhupada was talking with the bankers. And Prabhupada told, in fact, the very story that we're reading now about Dhruva Maharaj. How Dhruva Maharaj was some yaksha killed his brother, and in retaliation Dhruva Maharaj was killing the yakshas like anything. And then the Kubera is the patron of the yakshas, so he was not very pleased. So Kubera, along with Manu, is it? Swayambhuva Manu? They came before Dhruva Maharaj that this is not very good for the fault of one yaksha. You're killing so many. This is not your duty. So Dhruva Maharaj agreed. He spared the remaining yakshas. And Kubera was very pleased. So Kubera said to Dhruva Maharaj, I'm very pleased with you. So you give any, ask any blessing that you may wish. And Kubera's treasurer of the demigods. And he's holding all the cash for the heavenly planets. So, what can he give? Untold wealth. But Dhruva Maharaj just asked that please you give your blessings that I can always be engaged in the service of Krishna. And then Prabhupada looked at the bankers and said, so you're all representatives of Kubera. And then Prabhupada said, dead serious, will you please give your blessings that I can always be engaged in the service of Krishna. Then Prabhupada told a banker joke. Prabhupada told the story that there was one man who heard that money attracts money. A villager heard that money attracts money. So he took whatever money he had and he went to the bank. When he went to the bank, he saw that there was the teller is sitting there counting money. So the villager took his money and threw it on top of the pile. And then he's standing there, watching. So the banker said to him, the teller said to him, after some time, that, sir, you know, what are you doing? So the man said, well, I've heard that money attracts money. So I've thrown my money on the pile, and I'm waiting for the whole cash to come to me. So the bank teller responded that, yes, sir, it's true that money attracts money. He said, now my money has attracted your money. On a walk here in Vrindavan, Prabhupada was walking near Govindaji temple, and there was a question about how Krishna could be, you know, we hear that in the morning he's at Keshigad, and in the afternoon he's in Gokul, and some other time he's over here, and so, you know, those are big distances. You know, you rent a taxi and it takes you half an hour to get out from one place to another. So how is it that Krishna goes from one place to another in the course of a day? You know, maybe two or three of such places. And devotees had heard, it's actually in a book quoted by Srila Prabhupada in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But anyway, devotees had heard that Vrindavan is like a lotus. And a lotus opens and a lotus closes. And all of these places in Vrindavan are located on different parts of the lotus. And so when, as Krishna desires to go from one place to another, the lotus is closing and the places are becoming very near to one another. And so it's very easy to go. So devotees wanted to ask about that. And so they began, at Srila Prabhupada, you know, how is it that Krishna goes from Gokul to Keshigad and so many places in the course of a day? And Prabhupada said, he must have taken very big steps. There's another story, but Prabhupada tells this story himself. I think you may have heard many times about the devotees just nearby. We were walking, sannyasis, and so many devotees were walking with Prabhupada on his morning walk through a kind of field. There used to be fields around here where you now see all these buildings and developments. Whole road was practically empty, few little ashrams and empty space, and you'd sometimes walk and see one of those Nilgai in the morning. You know, it's just empty, and peacocks all over the place. It was mostly empty space here. Maybe once every 3 months you'd see an automobile. Very quiet. Anyway, we probably was walking. Shunye, Shanti Rakhiye. So Prabhupada's walking with these devotees through this field, and the farmer comes. And this farmer was like a real poor farmer. You know, the people with cloth that's permanently gray, and you could see his hands were the hands of a person who'd really been working hard his whole life. One of these guys who's like skinny but tough as nails. You know, real working person. And he came, Prabhupada's walking with this big army of sannyasis and dandas and everything. And the farmer offered full dandabhats in front of Prabhupada and the group. And he said in Hindi that it's the grace of Govinda, the grace of Krishna, that you've come to bless my field. That actually it's Krishna's field, and by his blessings you've all come. Prabhupada said if it had been the West, he would have come with a gun. Get out. No trespassing. But here, even the simple farmer was so cultured and so educated that he understood that this is Krishna's property and you're all Krishna's servants, so it's a great blessing upon me. There was one program in Bombay, very big pandal program, and Prabhupada, it was beginning to be summer. The summer was coming on. So a lot of people, and Prabhupada's sitting on the stage, devotees are sitting on the stage, and there are these big fans, you know, like big noisy industrial fans. And there was a chief guest who was some big man, a big judge, or you know, they arranged back then for big, big men to speak. The chief guest will speak and then Prabhupada will speak. So the chief guest is speaking, but because the fans were so, fan is such a, you know, big, noisy, industrial, Indian fan, and, you know, it has two functions. One is to spin and put out the cool air, and the other function is to go make a huge racket. So the fan is making such a noise that it was very difficult to hear what the man was saying. So Prabhupada just kind of looked over toward the fan, and I was sitting next to the fan. So I could understand that what Prabhupada wanted, so I hit the button, the fan went off. And then the man was speaking that, you know, the usual Mayavadi thing that whether you worship this way or you worship that way, we're all worshiping the same one truth, and whatever it was, Prabhupada just looked in my direction again. Now maybe it's just about time to stop. I think it is. Are ready for the next part? Well, we're waiting for the Kirtaniyas to come. Huh? Kirtaniyas will come.